Warning, the following is rated B for badass. Ben Settle is a diehard marketer, author, and self-described antipreneur. Love him, hate him, or leave him, his controversial perspectives on business, marketing, and the inner game of success will entertain, offend, or piss you off. Guaranteed. Or your money back. Listener discretion is advised.
So we're in our radio show now, Ben. It's happening.
This is Ben Settle of the Ben Settle Antipreneur Radio Show. This is the first episode. I'm going to have to make a kind of an admission here. I have not prepped for this show whatsoever. I've had about 1 hour of sleep last night. This is the most irresponsible thing I've probably ever done professionally. But there's a story to this that actually has a business lesson to it. And I do believe that the story I'm going to tell you will give you a good example of the kind of content you can expect to get on this show, because I don't want to make this just like everyone else's podcast. I mean, I love podcasts. I like listening to podcasts, but most of them are kind of hard content, or they're not usually very entertaining unless the guest is entertaining. This will mostly just be me and Jonathan kind of riffing and talking. We'll have guests on, and eventually we'll be having people call in live, but this first couple episodes we're going to be recording as I kind of work out the kinks of how all this works. But anyway, I'm going to start with a story here. Here's why I'm kind of not ready for this today, but I'm going to do it anyway, kind of jumping in the pool. Last night, I drove 3 hours. It was a Sunday night. I took a three-hour road trip to go visit this girl that I've been wanting to date. And I'm not going to name her. I'm not going to identify this girl because she's probably going to end up listening to this. And, you know, you got to keep her identity secret. Although maybe one day she'll call in and give her side of the story. But we had a great time. We were in this little town that I've always wanted to visit in Oregon. I had a great time. Spent a few hours together. Went to a couple wine tasting rooms and just had a good time. And then afterwards, we were kind of killing time. It was around 6 o'clock. It was starting to get dark, you know. But I didn't want to drive all the way out there and just leave after a few hours. So we decided to go hang out. She has a storefront business. And I'm not going to say what kind of business it is, because I don't want people being able to look this up. But she's like, let's go hang out there for a while. We both had our dogs. And, let the dogs run around in her store office setup thing. So we're just in there talking and drinking water, you know. Trying to get myself... my head clear before a three-hour drive home after wine tasting all day. And, you know, we're talking and getting into it. And I do what I always do, like when I go on dates. I do this even if I don't like the girl, which, like, 8 out of 10 times I don't like the girl I'm going out with. But, you know, that's a whole other story. I go in for the kiss, Jonathan, and I get denied. Now, this happens so infrequently, it's like statistically it never happens. But it did happen last night. And I go, what's the problem? You know, what's the big deal here? And she goes, I don't know you well enough to kiss you. And we've been hanging out for, like, you know, 6 hours, right? You know, so I'm thinking, okay, whatever. You know, it is what it is. You just kind of roll with it. Yeah, have fun with her anyway. We hang out for a little bit longer, another 20 minutes, 30 minutes, hour. I decide it's time to go. You know, it's getting late. I got a three-hour drive home, I got a podcast I got to prep for in the morning, and I better get up somewhat early, and so I get going. It's dark out, I get in my car, I start driving. About 7 miles out of town, I stop at this gas station to get gas. Now, in Oregon, where I live, you don't pump your own gas. A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of tourists come in here, and they get out and start pumping their own gas, and they get, like, yelled at, you know? They're not allowed to do it. And the dude who pumps my gas, he goes, man, I think both your headlights are out. You know? I go, what? I had the lights on, but the car turned off while he was putting gas in there. I go out there, and sure enough, just like the parking lights were working. And I turned the car back on, and then just one light was working. So basically, there's something going on with the fuse or something. Not something you really want to deal with when you're driving for 3 hours at night. Not just because cops tend to not like it when you have only one headlight, but also because, you know, what if both headlights, you know, what if there's a fuse problem, all the lights go out or something. So I'm like, oh, man, I'm just going to stay in town because, you know, being an independent entrepreneur, I have the, you know, luxury of not having to answer to a boss or anything. Not to rub that into anyone listening to this, but that's something you should be aspiring to, in my opinion. So you have that kind of freedom. So I'm thinking, I gotta find a hotel. So I'm like, I don't know this town. You know, this is the first time I ever visited. It's a fun town, but I didn't notice any hotels or anything. So I call her up. I call the girl up. And I say, can you recommend, you know, here's what happened. You know, I've got one headlight, maybe two headlights out. I'm kind of screwed here. I'm not going to drive 3 hours home. So can you recommend a hotel? And this really was my motive. I mean, you know, it kind of sounds like I planned all this out or something. Because the next thing she says is, yeah, I feel bad. Why don't you just stay at my place? Now, mind you, this girl just, you know, 30 minutes earlier or an hour earlier is like, I don't know you well enough to kiss you, but now she's asking me to, like, hang out and sleep at her place, which I thought was kind of interesting, of the rationalization hamster in play. But it gets even better than that. So I said, okay, I'll just stay at your place. She had a guest room and all that. It's cool. And my dog could play with her dog and all that, not be cooped up in, like, a comfort inn or whatever. So we go there, go back to her place, and we just kind of hang out. It's only like 8 o'clock. There's no reason to get up early or anything. So we're just talking, having a good time, just like we were doing on the date. And right around midnight, this was kind of weird. Right around midnight, all of a sudden, she starts wanting to kiss on me, like out of the blue. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought you said you didn't know me well enough. She goes, well, Ben, it's midnight, and so now it's like technically our second date. And that, Jonathan, to me, was kind of like, you know, the rationalization hamster at its finest, right? You know, the way that people can think. Now, I'm not just telling this story to tell a story about that. There's actually two business lessons of this. And this is what I'm going to do on this podcast. I'm going to tell you personal stories about me and people I know and just in life, just like I do in my email. So if you're listening to this and you're on my email list, it's just an extension of that. Except I get to talk in more detail, and you'll hear my audible voice, and I don't have to like edit myself too much like I would when I'm writing. And there's two like business lessons that kind of occurred to me here. The first one is, you know, if you have something that someone wants, right? Like this girl wanted to kiss me all night, okay? But she has class. She's a classy girl. She doesn't want to be thought of as like easy and all that. You know, we didn't do anything beyond that, by the way, at night. So I don't want anyone to think that we're like hooked up or anything. We didn't. But the point is, she's a classy girl. And, you know, you should be going for classy customers and classy prospects. And a lot of those people that are like that, I call them the higher hanging fruit. They are going to make you work a little bit harder to get the sale from them. But they're also the ones that are the most worth it. And you need to have patience with them like that. Like, you can't let it affect you if you get rejected in the business world by a client or a customer. And I mean, it happens all the time. Like, when I used to do client work, I would try to get a copywriting client, for example. And, you know, they'd sit there and they would play the game, right? Well, we're looking at other people. And they really weren't, but, you know, they're just playing the game. And you had to have that patience. You couldn't let your emotions get to you. You can't get mad because you get rejected, because it's not personal. It's rarely ever personal. It's just circumstances in that prospect's life, whatever you're selling. You know, it could be an information product, too. I mean, you could be spending hours, and one of my friends has been doing this, spending hours just trying to talk a customer into buying from you, like on the phone. Like, this is time you could be spending doing other things, but you know that customer will be a good customer, maybe a repeat customer, someone you want buying from you and someone you want in your life, quite frankly, because they're a quality person. And you got to have that patience. Patience is something, you know, that I had last night. Like, when I went to her house, I had no, I didn't even care about all that stuff. I was just like glad I had a place to stay, you know, because I'm driving around with like no headlights and stuff. And I didn't even know where like a hotel was. And I was just like grateful to be there and just had a good time. And you just let go of that desire. So like, if you need, like want a sale, learn to really let go of that desire. If it's just not happening, it will happen eventually. Have that patience and let go of that desire, and you'll probably make the sale in a lot of cases, especially with the better customers. Because they're worth it. You know, they want to make sure that you're worth buying from, and it's just, that's the game. That's the dance. Now, that's the first lesson that you can get from it. And the second lesson is a little bit more practical, you know, and it's something we all think about. But the fact is, now, my car is like 10 years old. Why do I drive a 10-year-old car? I don't know. I mean, I could get a new one anytime I want, but I just like it. It's comfortable. It's like, I just like my car. But this thing has been having little problems lately, and it's starting to become like an issue now. And I can't drive home at night because a stupid fuse is blown somewhere, and that's probably the first of many things that happen. And when you're in business, and this has happened to me too, you got a piece of equipment that's starting to malfunction, like a printer or a computer, or maybe you sell like a manufacturing type thing, like a bigger piece of equipment. Whatever it is you're, selling, or whatever it is you need to do business, get that shit in order, man. Get that stuff working, or get a new one. I mean, if you see something that's not working, get a new one because that could set you back quite a bit. I once had that happen to me actually not too long ago where I knew my printer was going out, but I just kept being lazy about it. And then I really needed it because I had to get some like tax information in to the IRS and all that, and they wanted me to get it in like that day. And I had to like go scramble around trying to find a printer to print some forms out and send it in. So I thought that was, it sounds like kind of a dorky little lesson, but it's something to remember and something to think about. So that kind of story that I just told you, that's the kind of thing you can expect from us or like content on here. This is not going to be like one of these shows where I'm going to sit there and, you're, oh, well, here's one subject line and here's another one and, here's the winner. You know what? There's millions of pages out there that'll do that. You can go to Marketing Sherpa. I mean, they do that. They give you all their stats. I like to talk philosophy about business, man. I don't care what it is. Business, marketing, whatever. I want to get deep. I want to get cerebral and play chess, so to speak, with the whole concept of entrepreneurialism. And now that brings us to the name of the show. And this is something like I said, Jonathan, he invented this name, the entrepreneur, the concept of the antipreneur. Now we all know what an entrepreneur is, but an antipreneur, this is kind of something that I've gotten a reputation for over the years here, just being, not because I'm trying to be controversial. This is what people get wrong. They think I'm trying to like purposely, I'm purposely trying to stand out and be the rebel. Actually, I'm not. I just see that the mainstream way of doing things these days, things that may have worked 50 years ago, it doesn't work anymore. Like, for example, the customer is not always right. The customer is never right. In fact, if the customer was right, they wouldn't be coming to you. They wouldn't need you in the first place. If that customer wants to hire you for something, let's say you're a graphic designer, and that customer comes to you and they're like, giving you, they're coming to you trying to dictate to you how to do your job. They're not right. They're wrong. They shouldn't even be hiring you if they're already right. So the customer's never right. And that's an example of what I mean by entrepreneur. You got to do things righteously in your business. You have to do things with a code of ethics and your own code of honor. And you do things your way. And if people aren't going to be in line with that, if a customer is going to sit there and fight you on things and cause you trouble, and they're going to make it a huge pain and a thorn for you, or it's a client, you got to learn to just drop those people out of your life. You got to learn to let go of that kind of stuff. And that's a big part of the philosophy. It's not about being a dick. It's not about being abrasive, like I'm kind of abrasive and people try to copy me, and it's that they miss the whole point. Because this whole idea of an antipreneur was kind of an offshoot of some blog posts that I wrote about this concept I invented, as far as I know, I invented at least, called the anti-professional. And the anti-professional is kind of based on the concept of the anti-hero. So think, for example, if you're geeky enough, think of the Incredible Hulk. He's not really a hero. He's not really a villain. He does good, and he doesn't do evil things. He does good, but he often does things maybe not in the best ways. Sometimes very, he's living his own code, basically. A lot of times he just wants to be left alone. But with an anti-professional, it's sort of the same thing. You're not like this super polished professional company. Like if somebody, like some companies need to be professional, and I'm the first to admit this. Like if you're a giant corporation, you're probably not listening to this anyway. But let's say you are, and let's say you're Amazon.com or something, and someone has like an unreasonable complaint, and they say something dumb or whatever. Let's say they. Your response would be, well, we're sorry, and we apologize for any inconvenience, blah, blah, blah. And again, they're, even though the customer is being kind of hard to deal with, so to speak, the anti-professional would not deal with that like that. Now, the unprofessional guy would say, well, you know, screw you, go away, we don't want your business. That would be unprofessional. The professional guy would be like I just said, you know, he's going to say, well, you know, would you like a free something else? You know, some free ice cream with that? Whatever. You know, they're going to try to bend over backwards to make that person happy, even though that person is really trying to waste their time and resources. The anti-professional either just ignores that person, radio silence, you know, or will say something to draw them, to repulse them away. So I'm gonna give you an example right now. Somebody just emailed a question to another business I partner in, where I do some consulting locally. And this person had bought one of my books off Amazon, Kindle, gave me a good review, actually. Good person. I have no doubt that this is a good person. Was asking about a product that I mentioned in an email to that list about how to buy businesses using none of your own money. It's an ad I wrote back in like 2004, so like 10, it's like back when my car was made, and it was like 10 years ago. And that product is no longer for sale, and you can't find the ad for it anywhere. No doubt this person wants to, you know, either find the product or read the ad or whatever, and that's fine. But I told our assistant who's taking care of this in that business, I said, tell him that, you know, that product's no longer for sale. In fact, the guy who made that product is like, I think he's like got Alzheimer's or something. I mean, that product doesn't exist. It's tied to him. We don't have the ad for it. I don't remember the name of the product. But this guy writes into my assistant saying, please just ask, what is it called? This is all I want to know. I spent $30 with Mr. Settle. I don't know what $30, you know, the Amazon book costs like $4, but whatever. And I was feeling quite okay about the purchase. But if a simple question about something he brought up causes this much anxiety, I'm not so sure. Now, I don't know what he's getting by anxiety. I honestly just don't know the name of the product. I don't remember it. It was 10 years ago. I don't have the ad for it. This person will be given this a response. I'm probably going to tell our assistant, her name is Jen, and she doesn't need to be hearing this kind of crap from this person, to either ignore him, you know, maybe just have his emails go into like a spam filter automatically, or I'll think of something to say like, go ahead and return the book to Amazon. We don't want your business anymore, you know, and just that. Because you don't need to take that kind of crap from somebody who's a customer. They can be respectful. You be respectful to them, and they be respectful to you. And I'm a big fan of, in this anti-preneur type of mentality, I'm a huge fan of responding to people with the same attitude that I'm given. Now, I know that this goes against what we were all taught with manners and stuff, and you know, I'm not saying you should do this in all aspects of your life necessarily, but when it comes to business, you know, a lot of people have this like entitlement mentality because there's so much marketing out there. There's so much advertising out there. Everybody's kissing their asses to get their business. So they think that they can just go around and make, you know, unreasonable demands and be jerks and, you know, just bring up stupid, snotty little passive aggressive things like this. Oh, anxiety. Nobody's feeling anxiety, dude. We just don't know. Don't know the name of the product. So you have to put these people in their place as an anti-preneur or anti-professional, whatever you want to say. You got to put them in their place. You got to let them know that you have something valuable for them. Absolutely. You're going to treat them good. Definitely. But if they're going to sit there and think that just because they bought something from you, they can walk all over you or say, send you nonsense, that's not acceptable. And that's the difference between a professional and an anti-professional. And an unprofessional would probably say something a lot meaner. So when I say anti-professional, anti-preneur, what I'm talking about is not sloppy, but just unpolished. And by unpolished, I mean...
So Ben.
You be...
Ben,
you.
Can I just jump in and ask you a quick question?
Yeah, dude.
Sorry to interrupt the monologue. But here's the thing. So we went around here. We started with how you had to wait. Like you waited on your date and everything worked out. And sometimes how you have to work with customers to get them, the high-hanging fruit is what you called it. And now you're telling us to tell these people to buzz off. So how do we know the difference, like, between those two? Because I get what you're saying, but I'm just wondering, how do we know which ones we should spend the time with?
You have a gut feeling. Like, when you're in real estate, I know that you've probably dealt with people. You're like, this tenant is going to be a complete pain in the ass. Like, you just know because of the way they're talking to you. Or the way they've treated you or someone on your staff. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I know the feeling that you're talking about.
That's how I would do it. I mean, it's just a matter of respect. Like, if somebody, what's that movie? One of my favorite movies. I'm gonna go off on a little tangent here. One of my favorite movies, Boys in the Hood. Right, I love that movie. I think that movie is really cool. And at the beginning, Furious Styles, the father, is telling young Trey Styles, like, these rules for being a leader. And one of those rules was never respect anyone who doesn't respect you back. And that's really the essence of how you can tell the difference. I mean, if somebody's coming at you with respect, you know, maybe they have every right to question you if they have a question, or maybe they're challenging you. I mean, dude, you should see the emails I get from people. I get mail from people that challenge me and all that. And I don't mind it at all if it comes from a place of, you know, sincerity. You know, it comes from a place of righteousness. Like you just asked me that question, right? That was a good question. And it was a respectful question, and it was asked in a good tone, and, you know, we can talk about it. But if you'd said, Ben, you're full of shit, dude. You just said X, Y, Z, and now you're saying this. I'd have been like, dude, no. It's like, why would I want to deal with someone like that? And a lot of it comes down to who you're spending your time with. Wouldn't you rather spend your time with high-quality people, high-quality customers, than these, like, cruddy people who just have nothing better to do but complain and whine, right? I mean, your business is only going to do better if you surround yourself with better people. So does that kind of answer your question with that?
That's what I was looking for, was that clarification. And yeah, that you hit it, man. Thank you.
Okay. You know, the next thing I wanted to kind of talk about here on this first show especially was, you know, why are we doing this show? You know, I just kind of threw it out there a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago. I was talking in my emails about my 2014 goals. And, like, I talked about how I want to have more patience. That was a big one. You know, patience is huge. Like, I used to be the most patient guy in the world, and I just kind of lost it for various reasons over last year. And I want to get it back. I mean, I have it back, but it's at the conscious competence level, meaning I have to think about it. I want to get it back to the conscious incompetence. Or what is that? Unconscious competence level, where it's like driving a car. You just don't have to think about it. And, you know, I talked about self-discipline and all that. And then I also said, I want to start a podcast. And I had no idea how to do it. It just seemed like it would be fun. It seemed like it'd be the next step in my business. It seems like I could get people from iTunes and whatever that other one, everyone. What's that other thing we're going to be on?
Jonathan? Stitcher. Yeah. One of them.
So
Stitcher.
Yeah. So there's a whole, you know, a whole new, like, crowd of people that I've never reached just marketing right now. And I just thought it'd be fun. And I wanted to do something different. Like, I didn't want to just do guests, you know. I wanted to do kind of like a radio. Like, I love talk radio. I mean, I pattern my emails after talk radio shows. And some of my influences have been, like, guys like Michael Savage. You know, that guy, you know, a lot of people hate that guy and a lot of people love him. But there is nobody who is lukewarm to that guy. And that's how I kind of like to be. I mean, I'm not talking about politics. I'm just saying, by showing your personality and just being who you are, you're going to do that naturally. So he's one guy. Plus, that dude can sell, like, he can launch books like I've never seen anyone do. He does not play nice with any of his colleagues, as far as I can tell, at least. So it's not like he's on Fox News or any of these news channels plugging his new book. He has to do it all on his own, on his show, to his own audience, and he does it brilliantly. And I have patterned my launch method, actually, a lot after some of the stuff he does. Another one of my influences is this late comedian. His name is Patrice O'Neill. And, you know, I've listened to, he had this show called The Black Phillip Show, which is kind of like a relationship advice show that I had started listening to after I got divorced a couple years ago. And, you know, it really, like, got my mind on straight about a lot of stuff. I don't necessarily endorse the guy's lifestyle that he lived. He's not alive anymore. He died of, like, a stroke or something. He was pretty young, like 43. But he was one of these comedians who just knew how to get to the street level. If he was teaching something, he brought it down to the animal street level, where you could not argue with it. You could not, like, it was just so tight. Like, it was like, oh, man. Like, I would not want to debate that guy about anything. And he would make his lesson so crystal clear just by getting down to the street level, to the animal level of a person's mind. And I try to pattern my emails a lot like that too. But he was another huge influence. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do this show, I'm not going to be talking about relationship stuff. Well, maybe a little bit, John. Throw some stories in there every now and then, like today. But, you know, that's not what I mean by his being an influence. It's just he's philosophical. He does things in his own way. He's the perfect example of the antipreneur. I mean, he was a comedian, but the same thing. So those are the two main ones. There's also this dude I used to listen to when I was younger, when I was in high school. His name was Mancow. I don't know if he's on anymore, but that dude used to have, I mean, he was so entertaining. And I remember he's just so full of energy. And, you know, that dude could just go off on tangents like nobody else. So he was another one. And, you know, one of the things that this show, and I mentioned this a little bit before, this is not going to be like a hard information how-to show. Like, if you're listening to this thinking, oh, man, I'm going to learn how to write subject lines, or, oh, I'm going to learn how to write, you know, copy doing this. I'm going to learn how to, you know, how to this and how to that. This is not it. I mean, there's so much content out there. Go ahead and lift it. I probably won't be giving away stuff that's in my paid products either. I mean, it's just basically an extension. It's an audio extension of my daily email. And Jonathan, I don't know how often we're going to be doing this show. What did we say, like once a week, twice a week, maybe?
Yeah.
So it's
yeah. I think we should at least do once a week for sure, because you've got enough in you,
dude. I can talk about this stuff for like ever. Like, I can't shut up about this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I need this outlet, man. It's like, I don't even, my business friends get tired hearing me talk about business, man. So it's like, you know. I was so grateful, by the way, when you like offered to help. And I wanted to bring that up. Jonathan came to me offering to help me do this. And I'm so grateful. And him and I are not partnering on this. And just know up front, we are going to be selling things on this show. Now, we're not going to be obnoxious about it. It's going to be just like any other talk radio show. You know, we'll just throw it in there when it makes sense. You know, especially when we're doing like live Q&As and stuff and people asking questions. If the product that we have, or if we start taking paid advertising, which we're playing around with, if it makes sense, we're going to plug things. Because at the end of the day, we're not doing our ethical duty. We're not doing our job if we don't let you know that a solution to a problem you have exists. It may not be the solution you want. You may not want to buy it. That's fine. You know, we're not going to shove anything down your throat. We know what we have. We know the value we offer. But just like in my daily emails, you know, I'm going to sell something to you every day. And I'm doing it from a position of, I really want to help you. And I can't help you if I don't sell you something. If I just gave you free stuff and just came on the air and we just talked free content. I've listened to shows like that. And the problem is, it's not that they're not useful. It's just that they're not valued. People don't value what's free. I don't value what's free. You know, I got a real story about this for you. Back in 2003, I was so broke. I mean, I don't even know how I afforded it. But Gary Halbert was selling his Boron Letters book. Now you can get on freaking Kindle, you know, for $9 or whatever. But back then it was $97. And it was just like this, like, really valuable book at the time for me. I was just still getting started in the business and everything. I don't know how I got that money. I mean, I honestly, man, I could barely pay rent back then, but I somehow scrounged it together. And I bought that book, and I have read that book cover to cover at least 30 times. I mean, probably more like 50 times, because it's not like it's that long of a read. And I've even copied it out by hand in my own handwriting, because that's one of Gary Halbert's ways of learning to write ads, is to, you know, find good copywriting and good writing like that and handwrite it. So you kind of get a neurological imprint of it, of what good writing is. So, I mean, I really took it seriously. And I can attribute tens of thousands of dollars in revenues that I've made in my business to things I have applied in that book, because I've read it so many times and it's so ingrained in me. And I would notice something on like the 12th reading that, like, oh man, I got to be doing that. And I would implement it and I would see results. Now, had I gotten that book for free, which was on his site for free for many years, it may still be actually on thegaryhalbertletter.com. I mean, by all means, read it, but you're not going to appreciate it the way I did, you know, but where it hurt to buy it, you know. So my point is there's no shame in selling, and we certainly are not going to feel any shame in selling stuff to you if it makes sense. So I want to throw that in there. Jonathan, do you have any like comments on that before I get into some, I want to answer some questions that came in over the weekend?
Well, I think that, I mean, the first listeners of these shows are going to be obviously readers of your newsletter, just like me. But I think for people that maybe get into this later or don't know you yet, I think that that's one of my favorite things about you. I'm a big fan of your work. You've made me a shitload of money. So that's why I'm sitting here with you. You made me a ton of money. But the idea of not giving things away for free, picking the right customers, knowing your value, and really the psychology of selling is what I picked up from you. And my whole attitude has changed. And that's why I jumped at the opportunity to be able to be here with you. Because I know even when I listen to you talk, I still learn more. You know, I always pick up new things, just the same way writing out those letters over and over. Just keep in the pocket, right? And keep at it, and you can't help but get better.
Well, I'm always so glad. And you're like one of these guys that always lets me know what you're up to and stuff. And it's always good to hear that. And, you know, and it's funny because you and I've been learning a lot from you lately, like just on the whole radio audio side of things. I mean, you've seen my ignorance, okay? You've experienced my ignorance.
It's blissful.
I mean, it's bad, right? But it's an example. What you and I are doing is a perfect example of a joint venture. You know, I could try to do this myself, and it would fail. It would bomb. It would not be anywhere near as good as it's... I mean, the stuff you and I have been talking about that we're going to implement, I mean, it's exciting. You know what I mean? And it's a perfect example of how to do joint ventures. Most people try to do things themselves. Don't do things yourself. To me, it's crazy to do things yourself. In this day and age with the internet and everything, you can find someone who's better than you at things that you're not good at, and you focus on the one thing you're good at. I mean, you're the audio dude. I mean, you know stuff that, I mean, you're going to help us get some, hopefully get the licensing rights to some certain music. And I mean, these sound like little things, but it's like, these are like time consuming things. And just like syncing up the audio, like we were talking about earlier, like, I'm not going to get into all that right now, but I'm like, really, this is how we do it? Like, I never would have known this is how we do this through the internet. You know what I mean? It's like stuff like that. And, but that's your thing. You know, we've been back and forthing things and ideas, and it's exciting. So I'm just real glad to be working with you finally, because I remember we were supposed to joint venture before on that ebook I wrote about prostate stuff. And, it, you know, that kind of fell through. But, you know, I always knew we would joint venture on something. So I was real glad to hear that you were on board with helping me. And I was going to add, by the way, that Jonathan offered to do this for free. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. So, you know, but we're doing this 50-50. Any revenues we make, man, it's a 50-50 thing. So I tell people that because people tend to get greedy, you know. I'm thinking, I'm happy to, like, split everything halfway down. If I'm doing it with three people, split everything three ways, because you're only going to end up with more in the end. So that said, I guess that's kind of another little lesson we just threw in there. But I do have a question here that was emailed in. And by the way, I just want to add one more time. We're planning to do live calls eventually. But for now, I'm just going to read questions that come in. This first question I want to answer is, hi, Ben. I notice a lot of marketers, including yourself, are actively taking the time to tell their subscribers to unsubscribe in their daily emails. Like we're going out of our way to do it. Just wondering why you would even bother to say that. Is it to show validation that you don't need everyone, or is it a tactic to make the people that already like you love you even more? Keep being real, signed KB. Well, you know what, man? I thought this was a great question. I think this is, I love questions like this because it's not tactical. People try to reverse engineer what I do all the time. And I mean, they admit it. People will absolutely admit to me. Then I sit there, I'm not on your email players. I'm trying to reverse engineer what you do. You know, they're never going to figure it out. I mean, you know, Jonathan. I mean, they're only going to get like 30% by reverse engineering. They're just going to frustrate themselves. But this is a good question. I don't do things tactically like that. I do this, again, as the philosophy of an anti-professional / antipreneur. This is just a righteous philosophy of mine of how I do business. I don't want certain people on my list. I don't care about having a big list. I care about having a responsive list. In fact, I've recently had my thinking elevated quite a bit by talking to this guy named Danny Inney, who I recently did a joint venture with, about not just building a list, but building an audience, which has been a huge like mind shift for me lately. In fact, it goes hand in hand with doing this podcast. But I don't want people, certain people on my list. Now, I want people who are hot or cold. I do not want lukewarm people on my list. For one thing, autoresponder companies, and they're all like this, and they have to do this, will charge you more when you have a certain amount of people on your list. So if you have a bunch of lukewarm people, mush cookie types, who are just not going to buy anything, and they're just there to, you know, because they're just looking for free stuff or whatever, and nothing against them. I mean, I'm not saying they're bad people. But why would you want to pay extra money for having them on your list? It makes no sense. They just clog it up. Plus, those are the people who are not actively involved in, like, reading your emails. And, like, I don't care. Like, I love unsubscribes, personally. I've talked about this before. I could talk about it more. I like it to a whole show just on unsubscribes. But I don't want them pushing the spam button. So the sooner I can get people off my list who are not hot or cold or who are just, like, indifferent, or who are going to, you know, just, they're just like these people who are overwhelmed already and maybe they shouldn't be on any list. These are the people most likely to push that spam button. And you don't want people pushing that because that can hurt your standing with your autoresponder company. They won't get too many of those and they'll kick you out, which is, by the way, a good reason to back up your lists regularly. I use a service called AW Pro Tools, but my friend Jack and business, another one of my business partners, Jack Bourne, that he created, it's, you know, I'll just give a free plug for him. I have an affiliate link for this, but I don't know what it is. So just awprotools.com, and you can do a whole, it basically lets you turn AWeber into like Infusionsoft. It gives you all these cool features, but one of them is it'll automatically back your list up every day, which is important. But to get back to the question, you know, it's just as a way of doing business. I don't want everybody on my list. I just don't. I take it. Well, I'm going to get biblical on you guys here. There's this part in the book of Revelation where Jesus is like, you know, I'd rather you be hot or cold, not lukewarm. Or I'm going to like spew you out if you're lukewarm. And that's what I try to do. I try to spew people off my list who are lukewarm. Get out. And in fact, if I can cut them off at the pass from even wanting to subscribe at all, which is why I put a lot of barriers up on my opt-in points. Like, I'm very clear at the opt-in point, wherever that is. There's like three or four places I can opt in on my site. I'm extremely clear. This is a daily email. Now, it's really only like 5 days a week. I'm getting into more 6 days a week. But I say daily. So they know they're getting daily emails. And then when they get their welcome email, which in that email is a link to a free issue of my email players newsletter, so there's real value in that. It says, look, remember, this is a daily email. If you don't want to get daily emails, just go ahead and unsubscribe. There's no hard feelings. It's okay. Like, I don't take it personally. I just would rather them unsubscribe as early as possible or not subscribe at all if they're not serious. And it's not a tactic. It's not, like, I'm not trying to make anyone love me. Honestly, dude, I don't know what I would be doing right now to make anybody love me. I practice what's called repulsion marketing. And this goes into a whole other thing. I used to do some work for my friend Mike Dillard, who was a great client of mine. I mean, I'd do anything for those guys. They opened so many doors for me when I was just, like, when I was not new, but I was just getting to that intermediate stage. And he teaches this thing in the MLM world. For, you know, he teaches, or he used to at least at the time. His company still does it, but he doesn't. But he taught this thing called attraction marketing, where you put marketing out there to attract people to you. So, it's a good concept, and I have nothing against it. But I go the opposite way. I'm a repulsion marketer. I would rather be as polarizing as possible. Not as a tactic. Not like because I'm trying to purposely make somebody angry or anything. But I know there are certain types of people that I don't want. Like, for example, I don't want freebie seekers anywhere near me. I mean, they're more than welcome to sign up, grab the free issue, and get out of Dodge. I don't care. But I don't want, I'm going to try to get them off my list. And I'm going to try to get them to not buy anything because I know they're going to be pain in the ass buyers too. So anyone who's like complains about things like, oh, information overload, you know, that's a big one. Or people who just, like, they don't understand the difference between investing in information and buying information. I want people who have like an investing mindset. Like when I buy a lot of information products, I don't look at it as an expense. I look at all those things as an investment, like going back to Gary Halbert's Boron letters. I mean, I invested in that. I didn't like, oh, God, I bought, no, I just wasted $97 on this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I invested in this. And I got my money's worth out of it probably, you know, 100-fold. I mean, I don't know the exact number. But that's the kind of people I want on my list. And I think that's the kind of people everyone should go for. Whatever you're selling. I don't care if you're selling a book on, you know, how to have a better garden, or if you're selling... One girl wrote me an email asking for advice. She sells ebooks on cooking tips, you know, recipes and stuff. She's a recipe blogger is what she says. And she was telling me how, man, I got all these like old ladies and stuff. None of them want to buy anything. They just yell at her. They're always mad at her if she tries to sell anything. And I'm like, here's your problem. You're going after the wrong people. Your whole problem is not your product. It's probably nothing to do with your product. Your product's probably fine. You're probably, you know, doing a great job blogging, but you're going after the wrong people. You're not going after the right crowd. You're not going after the starving market, as Gary Halbert would say. You're going after people who just, you know, they're not willing to buy or pay for anything. So you're kind of dead out of the gate. And so that's why I do the thing I do there, where I tell people to unsubscribe. I mean, it comes down to that. I tell people not to buy products all the time. I mean, it's not because I'm trying to do a takeaway tactic, although that is what it is, technically. But it's not like a tactic. It's just a way of doing things. It's a principle. It's not a tactic. So I hope that answers your question, Kevin. Jonathan, do you have anything to add about that? Because I know that you're kind of, you know, you go along with this sort of thing, too.
No, I like that. That was one of my favorite things, that whole repulsion marketing idea and making sure that you get rid of those people that are, they're really a hindrance to doing business because they take up more of your time, you make less money with them, and you often lose. So if you can get rid of them, why not, right? I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I can just imagine your one of your businesses where you have tenants, right? I mean, do you want the,
yeah,
you know, do you want the low-class jackass people? No, you're probably repulsing them, I would guess, in your advertising.
Well, you know, it's you have to figure out how to do it, but not even in the advertising, you know, through the layers that they have to come in through, because it's direct response marketing on the way in. So they have to go to a recorded message. They have to go through some filtering. And even when you talk to them, the right questions, right? Just asking the right questions so that you kind of qualify them. So if they're not right, you know, they're disqualifying themselves when they give you the wrong answers, like, no, I don't have a job, right?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting, dude. And you know, I don't do much of that because I don't do that kind of, you know, I don't sell those kind of products. But when you put it that way, that you're asking questions, you're kind of like, and they don't, I'm going to guess, they don't realize that you're actually testing them when they do, when they read those questions. Do they, I mean, they don't sense that from you, do they?
No. I don't think so.
So it's kind of like when I went to the eye doctor a few years ago. This doesn't seem relevant, but it just reminds me of it. I was like, you know, one time I was stupid about it, and I was like trying to beat the eye doctor. Like, I was guessing the letters, so I couldn't actually see them. So I'm like guessing the letters, and I ended up getting like this weak prescription, right? And I had a new eye doctor like the next month, because I had to go. I just said, oh man, I really screwed up on that one. And I go, here's the problem. I'm kind of a dumbass when it comes to this. Sometimes I just try to like guess it. He goes, oh, don't worry, man. I'm gonna trick you like four different ways. You can't get, you know, I'm gonna get you the right prescription because of the questions he was asking me. Not necessarily showing me things, but he would ask me questions about what I was seeing. And I didn't know what was going on, except for he told me, but it reminded me of what you just said. You know, sometimes you gotta do that.
Definitely.
Here's another question. Here's another good question. I like this question because I was in this dude's shoes, but this dude is only 17, and I wish at 17 the opportunities were available that when I was 17 that there are now. But anyway, his question was, my name is, by the way, I'm going to apologize right now. I cannot pronounce Wordsworth. I just suck at pronunciation. I'm surprised I was able just to say pronunciation. I mean, I'm terrible at it. So if I butcher someone's name, I'm sorry. But it's Hassan, Hassan. Because my name's Hassan. I'm 17 years old from the UK. I love your emails, and I find them wonderfully insightful and unpredictable. Which, by the way, is I'm glad he picked up on that. Unpredictable is very important. I want to ask what you think the best way for a beginner freelance copywriter to get their first client is. And you know what, man? I was in that. You know, I remember being in that position. And here's something I wish I would have done. And there's a lot of ways to do this, okay? And it depends on your skill level. You want to, first of all, get yourself really good as fast as you can. that goes without saying. But here's the thing. There's this concept that everybody knows about, but very few people really understand or implement. And it's called social proof. So what I would do is I would find people who have, you know, a good reputation in whatever market you want to write for. And I think you should specialize this on. I think you should think of something to specialize in, like what something that you're already kind of knowledgeable about the market. Not necessarily you're knowledgeable about products, but a market that you're, like a market that you're in, ideally. Like if you have, let's say you had a urinary tract infection or something, and you know what that pain is like, and there's, and let's say there's like someone selling a urinary tract infection thing, I'd go for clients who sell that kind of product because you know the pain. Or maybe Hassan, maybe you're kind of a fat little mofo or something, you know, and you're trying to lose weight. And you know what it's like to want to lose weight, and you're frustrated. I'd go into that market because you know you can speak their language. So, you know, try to find a market and specialize in that. That would be my first piece of advice. But as for getting a client, try to find somebody with a few people, actually, with kind of well-known reputations. The more well-known, the better. The more guru, I mean that with a U, not two O's, but actual G-U-R-U, like real respected people in your market, and offer to do something for them on spec, just on spec. And I know people will say, oh, never do anything on spec. Don't listen to them. There is a time when you can do things on spec. Don't rely on doing these things on spec for income. But what you can do is, I'll give you a real life example. Here's something I did. Back in 2005, I got an email from this guy named Ken McCarthy. Now, Ken McCarthy is a very, at the time especially, he's kind of not putting himself out there as much as he used to, but he's like the founding father of internet marketing. Like, he used to be Dan Kennedy's internet marketing guy. Very well known, especially at that time. He's just been around for a while. He's got a great reputation. And I did some work for him. Now, I didn't do this as for the reason I'm telling you to do it, but it has worked out this way. When I started telling people, yeah, I did some work for Ken McCarthy, suddenly they didn't even need to see my samples or anything. Like, oh, well, if you're good enough for Ken, you're good enough for me. So find a guru or two or three or four, whoever you will listen, and just say, hey, man, can I write something for you? Can I write a lift letter if you're doing direct mail stuff? Or can I write, an opt-in page? Can I write some AdWords ads for you to test? Just something, anything. Bullets. Say, if you happen to be good at writing bullets, say, can I write some bullets for you? And you can use them or not use them at your thing, but, do you need this help? And two things are going to happen. One thing is you're going to get better at your craft because you now have a purpose. You have something to kind of drive toward, something to hone your skills on. Because you're going to try to impress these people, I would hope. But second of all, you can now legitimately say in your advertising for your services, I have done work for this XYZ guru. Now, you didn't say you got paid for it or anything, but you did write bullets for them, or you did write a squeeze page for them. Now, you want to make sure that they were happy with it if you're going to make these claims. Like, if you wrote something they thought it sucked, don't do this. But if they, if they were happy with it and they tested it or they used it or they even said, hey, thanks for sending this in, you can legitimately say, let's say it was, let's say you're writing for, I don't want to use any real guru names. Let's say you're writing for Jonathan Rivera. Let's say Jonathan Rivera is like well known in the real estate guru thing. He's like an infomercial guy. He's like, I legitimately, did some copywriting for Jonathan Rivera. And everyone who knows who he is going to be like, oh, wow, this dude must know what he's, what he's doing. You're using social proof. Now, the only caveat here is you got to be good at what you're doing. You can't be some if you're just getting started, don't do this necessarily. I mean, you can do it, but don't get your hopes up that anyone's going to listen to you or anything. So that's just one way to do it. Another thing you must be doing, and I did not do this, and I'm kicking myself for not doing it. I wish I had done this. Had I done this 10 years earlier, I'd be far, far, farther ahead. And that is, while you're trying to get clients, or while you're looking into getting clients, you must be writing for yourself. You must be your own best client. And here's what I mean by that. You create or find or license or something. I don't care if it's an affiliate product. You just write your own ad for it. You be your own best client. And you sell your own product. And ideally, your own product, like something you created. I don't care if it's the video or whatever. And again, pick a market that you specialize in. Be your own best client, because then you can be at least making some income while you're looking for clients. And not only that, but you're going to get really, really good a lot faster. And you might even wisen up, like I did not do when I was in your position, and say, why the hell am I wasting time writing ads for anyone else when I can just write for myself? It's a huge difference. Now, one more tip for this, because this is important. I am a big fan of paying yourself first. Now, not just financially, not like just from like a Robert Kiyosaki point of view. Robert Kiyosaki is like this financial, he wrote the best-selling book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I think everybody should read. And he, you know, he didn't make this up. I mean, everyone who's, I mean, I think, gosh, The Richest Man in Babylon or whatever that book was. I mean, this is like ancient information. Pay yourself first. You do this with your copywriting and or whatever talent you have. Maybe you're not even a copywriter. Whatever your talent is, you work on your own stuff. That the first hour of every day goes towards your project. And I'm telling you right now, I did this myself. When I was like working, I don't know how many hour days, 16, 17, 18 hour days for about a month and a half. This was back in 2011. I had taken on a client. I was on retainer, which means I was basically their bitch. I was doing everything for them. I was also building my own products, and I was doing, you know, in two different niches, like my bensettle.com stuff, and also I was building this, like, this website and writing articles. Like, my goal was to write 1,000 articles for easingarticles.com at the time, which turned out to be a bad strategy. I've gone into this on my blog if you want to read about it. But point is, I was writing a lot. Like, I wasn't even sleep. Like, some nights I wouldn't even sleep. I'd be so wired. I'd go, like, entire nights without sleeping. But I'll tell you what. People were on me, oh, we need this squeeze page, we need this, we need that. You know, they were on all, I had two different clients going at the time. And I just said, you know what, the first hour belongs to me. And I'd worked on my own stuff. And it made a huge difference. In fact, my goal that year was to get out of client work. That I gave myself 12 months. I put a business plan together for 12 months. And because I did this, put my own stuff first for that first hour every day, I made my goal within 6 months. I was done by August or mid-July. So pay yourself first. And that, you know, you do those things, you're not going to have too much problems in the copywriting world. So what are we at now? Like,
yeah, if you want to do one more question, you have maybe about 7 minutes or so before we want to wrap this thing up.
Okay.
Or a closing thought, and we can close it however you want, man.
All right. Well, here's one question. It's an easy one. People ask all the time because they don't understand, I guess, how to use Google. But I'm gonna help them out because that's my job, to help people out. They can't use Google, so I will do their Googling for them. This is from a guy named, I'm gonna butcher this name, Yoav, Y-O-A-V. Okay, I'm sorry, dude, if I butchered your name. It's not personal. He asks a question that a lot of people ask, and I understand why people ask it because they never define it. He goes, "What's a droogie?" Because in my emails and my blog, I often call people my droogs. I say, hey, my little droogie, here's a tip, you know, whatever. Okay, a droog is, it's like a hybrid word, Russian-English word for, like, friend, basically. Like, you know, like your street thug friend. It's from the book in the movie A Clockwork Orange, which is a very, very bizarre movie if you've ever seen it. It's one of the first rated X movies, not because it's a porno, but it was just so bizarre. A very bizarre movie, but it actually, you know what, to talk about that real quick, I've written about this in Email Players, that movie's interesting, not just that movie and that book, but I'm a big fan of using words in emails that people aren't accustomed to seeing, because it, like, gets attention, like droogie, like, people now think about that when they read it, and so it's good to look at slang from science fiction or other countries. Australian slang is, like, my favorite. I love Australian slang. I mean, you know, as useless as a tits on a bowl, and that's one of my favorite ones. Or when you call someone, you old bastard, there, it's like a term of endearment. Here, it's like people get offended. So, I mean, it's just, I love Australian slang. But that's what droogie means. So I guess I'll just close this out then. Jonathan, thank you so much for helping me with this. And I guess I had fun, and hopefully this turns out good after we listen to it, and we'll do another show.
Hey, so Ben, what can we expect next time? Because we are bringing another show, right?
Yeah. Well, the next show we're talking about the importance of cutting people and things, anything out of your life that, you know, things that basically waste your time. You know, anything that complicates your life. Like, I'm all about simplicity. And I think the more simple you can make your business, the more fun you're going to have, the more money you're going to make, even though it might not seem like it at first. One of my business partners, Trevor Mock, who's going to be a little disappointed with me with this first show because he thinks I should be drinking a glass of wine as I do this show, and I'm not right now. Maybe I should the next time. But he's got his business now where it's kind of like in a lot of moving parts. And he's like, Ben, I'm trying to do what you're doing. Because he has a family, and he's got like a wife and kids, and he wants to spend time with them, you know? And I don't have a wife and kids, but I certainly don't want a complicated life. And I've like cut people out of my life who complicate it. So we're going to talk about that next time.
Super. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Great show, Ben.
Thank you very much.